room. The writing room. The writing room. The writing room.
Hello and welcome to this sixth bonus episode. This is episode 6, Timothy Dalton.
On today's episode, we're going to be talking about Timothy Dalton, the fourth actor to play James Bond. We're going to release a special bonus episode for each of the actors that have played Bond in the Eon film franchise. So let's get into this one.
So as usual, I'm going to kick us off. So I'm going to discuss a little bit of his bio, is what we're calling it. So his name at birth was Timothy Leonard Dalton Leggett. His date of birth was the 21st of March 1946. His star sign is an Aries, which is the same as me, Andy. And his place of birth is Denbighshire in Wales.
Similar year to your birth as well, if memory serves. But anyway, his personal life, just the one child, but he also has two brothers and two sisters. Never been married, but was engaged twice. Once to Vanessa Redgrave, who he was with from 1971 to 1986. And he was also with Oksana Grigorieva. Grigorieva? Someone's going to fun edit in this. Oksana Grigorieva from 1995 to 2003.
So as usual with these little bonus episodes that we do for each of the Bond actors, we're going to have a look at the career of the actor before they got the James Bond role. So Timothy Dalton left school at 16 and he enrolled in the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art and toured with the National Youth Theatre. Dalton did not complete his RADA studies, leaving the Academy in 1966, which I recall something else happened that year as well, to join the Birmingham Repertory Theatre. So a lot of this is theatre already, and I know we talked about this in the main episodes of Dalton, that he had a background in theatre, and you can see that here. So Dalton moved to TV, and in 68 he made his film debut. He also featured in a number of period dramas as well, and in 71 he took a break to concentrate on theatre productions.
He did make some films during this period. The 1971 film Mary Queen of Scots comes to mind, as well as the 1975 film Permission to Kill, which sounds like a prequel to License to Kill, doesn't it? First you get the permission and then you get the license. A few other films in the 80s as well. He appeared in Flash Gordon in 1980. He also featured in The Doctor and the Devils in 1985 with a certain Jonathan Pryce, who Bond fans will know as Elliot Carver in Tomorrow Never Dies. But of course, the reason we're talking about Dalton today is James Bond. He's actually been approached several times to play Bond over the years before he finally signed a 3-film contract following the departure of Roger Moore, who retired from the role after A View to a Kill. In an interview in 1987, Dalton said, "Originally, I did not want to take over from Sean Connery. He was far too good. He was wonderful. I was about 24 or 25, which is too young. But when you've seen Bond from the beginning, you don't take over from Sean Connery."
That's interesting, Andy. I'm just going to go off script here because obviously Dalton there said he was too young at 24 or 25. So the producers obviously were thinking about a younger Bond back then. And so I think that's quite interesting considering the things that we've discussed with the guest episodes, the things that we discuss in the who could be the next Bond, where we have said, you're looking at mid-30s, haven't you, really, is the ideal age. But back then, you know, he's talking about that he got approached in his mid-20s.
Yeah, I think what also is fascinating to me is the fact that they thought of Dalton in his mid-20s as a replacement for Connery, but they ended up going with a man in his mid-40s in Roger Moore. So a complete opposite, you might say, or a U-turn or a 180, one of those metaphors. But certainly away from the original plan, if indeed Dalton was the original plan.
I know we've discussed it before, like kind of like the what-ifs, because when we discussed it before about what would have happened if George Lazenby stayed on, we know Pierce Brosnan was also approached, what would have happened then if he started earlier, what would have happened if we had no Roger Moore? So it is interesting to kind of play those what-ifs. And if Dalton, for example, did start earlier, he could have probably been the longest-running Bond.
Indeed. Certainly not only in terms of years, but in terms of number of films, because obviously back in the 70s, they were cranking out one every 2 years at that point. So let's say hypothetically he played the role from mid-20s to mid-40s. That's, you know, at least 10 films it could get out of him.
Yeah, definitely. So carrying on, so In either 79 or 1980, so, you know, a few years before I was born, during pre-production for Your Eyes Only, he was approached again. But he did not favour the direction of the films that were taken then, so nor did he think the producers were seriously looking for a new 007, so maybe they were keen to keep going on with Roger Moore then. Dalton portrayed Bond in The Living Daylights, which was released in 87, and License to Kill, which came out a couple of years later in 89, which are obviously the 15th and 16th entries in the franchise. Unlike Moore, who had played Bond as more of a light-hearted playboy, Dalton's portrayal of Bond was darker and more serious, and apparently Dalton did push this as well because he wanted to get the emphasis on the more gritty realism of the Ian Fleming's novels, instead of like the fantasy plots and humour that you saw in the Roger Moore era. And that does echo some of the statements that we've had, haven't we, when we discussed the Bond actors with our James Bond superfans, Andy.
Yeah, Dalton is often spoken about as the kind of the gritty actor, the one who brought realism to Bond. And Dalton himself kind of backed up that point in an interview he made in 1989, which is, I believe, the year you turned 35. He said, "I think Roger was fine as Bond, but the films had become too much technopop and lost track of their sense of story. I mean, every film seemed to have a villain who had to rule or destroy the world. If you want to believe in the fantasy on screen, then you have to believe in the characters and use them as stepping stone to lead you into this fantasy world. That's a demand I made, and Albert Broccoli agreed with me." So he'd already got ideas of his own about what he thought Bond should be or could be, and it didn't seem to fit the mould that Roger Moore had made at that point.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, from my point of view, I've got to agree with what Dalton said in 89 when I would have been 8 years old. For our listeners, I'm not 35, like my co-host has stated. So let's have a little recap on what the rating room rankings are for the Dalton film. So I'm just going to go first. So obviously Dalton was only in two Bond films, and I gave License to Kill 7 out of 10 and The Living Daylight 6 out of 10. So across the two Bond films, that's 13 out of 20 and an average of 6.5 out of 10.
My ranking was the same, but rating slightly different. So I also gave License to Kill a 7 out of 10, but for me, The Living Daylights was only a 5 out of 10. So 12 out of 20, an average of 6. I was a little bit more underwhelmed with his debut overall, hence the 5 out of 10.
Which, Andy, I think will surprise listeners, especially the listeners that have listened to both those episodes, because I recall when we recorded License to Kill and we did our rankings, that people, especially James Bond fans, tend to rate The Living Daylights higher, but me and you, we've done it the opposite way around.
Yeah, one comment I think I made several times in that Living Daylights episode was I felt he wasn't consistent in his portrayal. Now, we've talked about the kind of the grittiness and the realism that he attempted to portray, and I think that comes through in License to Kill, and in portions it comes through in The Living Daylights, but I felt like it wasn't consistent enough. He had moments of realism, but then he had moments of silliness, and he had moments of weakness and moments of strength, and it felt like he was still, almost like he was finding his feet in terms of trying to figure out who or what James Bond was. I think he did a better job in License to Kill, and it was a better film. But his debut was, other than the opening scene, which I think I called out as my favourite scene, which started off really, really well, it went downhill pretty fast for me.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, Andy. I'm sure I recall you saying a few times during season one that the third film tends to be kind of like when the Bond actors kind of settle down and kind of performing their best stuff then. Is that right?
I think the evidence is there. Goldfinger for Connery. The Spy Who Loved Me for Roger Moore. Just pausing to make sure I'm correct in that. Yeah, I believe I am. Both fantastic films for those two actors. And in future weeks, you'll hear us talk about Brosnan and Craig. And for the listeners out there, the third Brosnan film was The World Is Not Enough. And the third Craig film was Skyfall. And you know, let's see if that theory reigns true in those episodes. But I've got a feeling they will, because off the top of my head, two very, very good films.
Yeah, I love how you remember these things, Andy. You can tell you're the bigger James Bond fan than me, because even though we've we've watched the films up until, obviously, we're talking about Timothy Dalton now, so we've done the Timothy Dalton films. My memory isn't that great, Andy. I would have to think and maybe even look at my spreadsheet to pull out what was Roger Moore's third film. So well done there.
It's your advancing years. I mean, you keep getting your age wrong during this episode. So memory's not your forte. But enough of my bullying tactics. Let's continue onwards. So some of the notable works of Dalton were both TV and film and also stage. So here are some of the roles that he's appeared in. I'll list a few and then hand over to you, Jay. So there was The Rocketeer, Scarlet, The Informant, Made Men.
His Dark Materials, Hot Fuzz, Penny Dreadful, and Doom Patrol. And Andy, have you watched many of them?
On that particular list, only Hot Fuzz comes to mind. I know of Penny Dreadful. I've seen it advertised, but I haven't actually watched it. But yeah, Hot Fuzz from that list. But there are others as well, and we're going to get into those in a few minutes, aren't we?
We are, and I'm the same. I've seen The Rocketeer, but that's an old film. Well, you know, it is old for me. His Dark Materials, yeah, I don't know if I'm confusing that, you know, because I was thinking His Dark Materials, The Golden Compass, but then I'm doubting myself now because I know there's a TV show called His Dark Materials, but I don't know if he's in it, the one I'm watching. Hot Fuzz, Penny Dreadful as well. It's one of those programs, Andy, and I've never said this to you before. I will kind of put on my watch list, but then never actually get round. And then after it's been on my watch list for a few years, you find out that it's ended or it's got cancelled. So you think, why should I even bother watching it?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've got a few films and TV shows that stay on my watch list forever until they disappear. But just to confirm what you just mentioned about His Dark Materials. So the Timothy Dalton production is actually the play, which was written by Nicholas Wright, but it was adapted from the novel trilogy by Philip Pullman of the same name. So you're right in that it is linked to what you now know as the TV show from the novels, but this was actually a play of the novels written by Nicholas Wright. And it premiered in 2003.
That's interesting, yeah. Because I've seen The Golden Compass, which is the film, which had Nicole Kidman in, but they only did the one film. But then I'm also watching in the UK, it's done on BBC iPlayer. So I know, well, I don't know what is done in America and Canada and other places across the world, which is a very good program, actually, His Dark Materials. Anyway, Andy, I interrupted you.
No, that's absolutely fine. Shall we talk about some of our favourite films of his that exclude the Bond franchise? So these are four films apiece that we've picked out. There's going to be some overlap, as you'll see in a minute. But these are four films each that Dalton has appeared in that we are personally fans of. Jay, do you want to go first with your list?
Thank you, dear sir. So I'm going to kick us off and say Flash Gordon. And this is a film that when I was growing up, my dad would have on a TV all the time if it was on TV. So it's something, you know, when in those days you only had four channels. And if you're flicking through and it's on one of the channels, he'd always keep it on. And it's very cheesy, but it is a good film. The Rocketeer is the second one, which is a film that I enjoyed as a kid. Hot Fuzz is my third one. And then Toy Story 3. Hot Fuzz, I've only ever watched it once, and it's one of those films that I've watched and I think, yeah, it's okay, but I wouldn't rewatch it. So you know the main actor, I'm trying to think of his name. Sean, what's his
name? Simon
Pegg? Where's Sean come from?
You're thinking Shaun of the Dead, that he's also
Yeah, Simon Pegg. You know, I think it's called a Cornette trilogy. So you've got Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and the World's End, I think it's called, or To the World's End. Have you seen that one?
I'm not familiar. I may have done, but I've certainly seen the first two. The third one is not ringing any bells right now.
So Shaun of the Dead, I really liked, but then Hot Fuzz, it got good reviews, and lots of people like it. But like I said, I watched it once, and I thought, yeah, it's okay. Toy Story 3, Andy, I think you're a bigger fan of Toy Story than I am. Do you recall who he played in Toy Story?
Off the top of my head, no. I do recall the film, and I'll just skip ahead just a second, because my list has three of the four that are the same as yours: Flash Gordon, Hot Fuzz, Toy Story 3, and I've cheated and included Toy Story 4. But Toy Story 3 is one of those films that I know Dalton is in, and I'm racking my brain to think who he is in that, and it's not coming to me. So I'm going to do some live Googling whilst we chat away. But I've put that on the list not necessarily because of Timothy Dalton, more because of the film itself. So it's a little bit of a cheat on my part. But it's an amazing film. Bear with me, listeners. Just talk amongst yourselves for a few minutes. It's fine. This is the joy of an audio podcast, is that you can't see what I'm doing, so you don't know that it's taken me a long time to Google. Timothy Dalton plays the part of Mr. Pricklepants.
Now I'm going to have to Google that to see which character that is, to see what he looks like.
Yeah, I'm not the same, because the problem is when I go onto the cast list, it's got the photos of the actors, but of course, they're all animated. Right, I'm going to have to Google Mr. Pricklepants. For those of you who are not fans of Google, there are other search engines available. I think Bing's still a thing. Yahoo. Jeeves, I'm not sure if Jeeves is around. Ah, he's the hedgehog, of course he is. Is the hedgehog in the Lederhosen?
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Nice. Should we just talk about Mr. Pricklepants for the next 90 minutes? This is from disney.fandom.com. Mr. Pricklepants is a thespian hedgehog in Lederhosen who says that he's trying to stay in character, even when Woody is tried inquiring about such and such as whereabouts. That first sentence is just brilliant. That's all you need to know. But yeah, as soon as I saw the picture, it came to mind. A very funny character. But yeah, very good film.
Yeah, and listeners, if there's any other films that you think we've missed, or that, you know, myself and Andy should watch, and you know, on any of the streaming platforms, or go out there, or even buy the DVD/Blu-ray, let us know, because you know, me and Andy's only picked four movies there, and three of them, like Andy said, we've duplicated. So let us know if there's anything out there that we're really missing. But with this next section, as we do with each of the Bond special episodes, is where we look at Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb. So I'm going to kick us off, and I'm going to pick the top five Dalton films as based on Rotten Tomatoes. So Toy Story 3, so Andy here is pretty much spot on with Rotten Tomatoes. Andy had it at number one. And in Rotten Tomatoes, it's number one as well. So it came out in 2010. The Rotten Tomatoes rating was 98%, and the audience score is 90%. Hot Fuzz is number two, came out in 2007, has a rating of 91% and an audience score of 89%. The Lion in Winter, so that's from 1968, and that had a 90% rating in both Rotten Tomatoes and audience. Then we've got Flash Gordon, one of my dad's favourite films from 1980, so a year before I was born, rating 83%, but an only audience score of 69%. So we've got a bit of a gap appearing now between the rating and audience score. And lastly, in terms of the top five, we've got the Bond film License to Kill, so that's 1989, a rating of 79% and an audience score of 61%.
Yeah, doing the equivalent for IMDb, so this is the top five, excluding documentaries and uncredited roles. Number one on IMDb is The Three Princes from 1968, which has a rating of 9.5. Second on the list is Toy Story 3 from 2010, which has a rating of 8.3, so there's a huge gap between The Three Princes and Toy Story straight away. The Lion in Winter is another duplicate, number three on the list, also 1968, with a rating of 7.9. Hot Fuzz from 2007 is next, with a rating of 7.8. And Toy Story 4 from 2019 has a rating of 7.7. And one thing I just want to slip in at this point, I added Toy Story 4 to my list as the one film that wasn't the duplicate of your list. It's an unnecessary sequel. Fine film, unnecessary sequel in my opinion. They should have kept it at 3. And recent news, there's talk of a fifth Toy Story in the making as well. So that will be interesting to see if that's yet another unnecessary sequel. But I digress.
I totally agree. It's just unnecessary. with that one. And I didn't know about Toy Story 5, Andy, so it's like, what are they going to do there? It's just a bit of a cash cow now, isn't it, for Pixar and Disney?
Yeah, I actually read that news today as we're recording, and I think there's a Zootopia sequel in the making as well, and one or two other Disney films. It is, yeah, like you said, it is a cash cow. Maybe they could, you know, now Andy's grown up, obviously they'd be an adult now, won't they, because it's been best part of 30 years. Maybe they go for something a bit more R-rated and make it the sex toy story. Something along those lines. That's Disney branching out into other areas in more ways than one.
So, Andy, so, yeah, you went in a totally different direction there. I thought, as you've kind of plugged your comedian skills, acting skills on the main podcast, where you said it was like 30 years, I think you were going to do like basically put yourself down as the Andy and it's going to be a real live action one and it was going to be all about your life, was the film.
And then what I've just said stands true. I'm cutting that out.
So this next section is the awards and honours that we like to talk about. So Timothy Dalton has been nominated for a number of different awards and, you know, nominations that he's had throughout his career. So behind the Voice Actor Awards, he was nominated twice. So 2014, Toy Story of Terror, and then 2013, Secret of the Wings.
He was the winner of the TV series Actor in 1994 for Framed at the Biarritz International Festival of Audiovisual Programming. Apologies if I've pronounced that incorrectly. And also won the award for Favourite Villain in 2011 for Chuck as part of the TV Guide Awards. And that kind of brings us to an end of where we're at. Jay, do you have any closing comments on Dalton? I think obviously we spoke about him in great detail across the two episodes of the main pod for his films. But any closing thoughts before we wrap this up?
I think, listeners, if you haven't listened to License to Kill and The Living Daylights, make sure you do go back. There's a lot of content there that is, you know, free of charge. My colleague here, Andy, has done all the hard work editing those. And you've got, what, how many hours have you got, Andy, across both of those roughly? Must be around five, if not more.
It's 5 hours plus across the two, or around 5 hours at least. I don't want to over-promise and under-deliver, but yeah, around 5 hours of content. There. Sound like my wife, don't I?
So yeah, listeners, you know, if you've liked this episode, or you know, you want to listen, if you missed the Timothy Dalton ones, go back and listen to those. He only did two films, and as if you've listened to any of the guest episodes, or we are releasing more guest episodes at the end of the season, the, you know, Timothy Dalton is rated highly by James Bond fans. So, you know, have a watch of those films and see if you disagree with me and Andy in terms of where we've ranked Timothy Dalton in the Bond actors that we do throughout the main season one. I think for me, Andy, in terms of kind of my closing statement is, when we started to pull together the script for this, it made me realize he's obviously a famous actor, he's very well known, he definitely, I would say, more of a stage theater, especially in his early career. But the thing that really came really kind of surprised me was I've not actually seen him in many things, even though he's been around since, I think you said the 60s when we were talking about it early. So he's been around all that time, and I've not really seen him in much.
Yeah, it's well, I think we made a similar comment around Roger Moore in our episode from a few weeks ago. A huge catalogue of work that he's been involved in. Highly sought after actor, very decorated. But yeah, sadly, we've probably not done him the justice he deserves. But I would say, you know, he's been in a few things that we've really enjoyed. The Bond films that he's been in, I think, were a mixed bag from my perspective. But it, for me, there's always going to be that what if. And I think it's what if he did do that third film. That's going to be the kind of the kicker for me, is that we'll probably never know how good he could have really been. But he does seem to be getting a lot of popularity and a lot of kudos these days for his portrayal of Bond. So so good for him.
I personally, if he did a number... if he did a third film, I personally would have liked to see him take one of Roger Moore films instead of taking GoldenEye off of Pierce Brosnan, is my personal opinion.
I agree. And we're going to be talking about GoldenEye in a episode coming very, very soon, in fact. Yeah, either a Roger Moore film or a different film altogether, maybe a brand new film, that kind of fills that gap between License to Kill and GoldenEye, just to finish off a trilogy. But we'll get into a little bit of why that didn't happen. I think we've spoken about it to an extent already, but with various legal troubles and the like, it never happened, sadly. But as always, we'd love to hear from our listeners out there. Tell us what you think of Dalton as Bond. Tell us what you think of Dalton in general. Usual social media accounts or via our website. We always like an opinion that agrees or disagrees with our own. Whether you want to talk about his TV shows or his films, or if you've seen him in theatre, let us know. And until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon right here on The Rating Room.
Well, that's this week's episode done. We hope you enjoyed it.
Special thanks to the band Sugar Tongue for the theme tune to The Rating Room. You can find them on all the usual social media channels, and be sure to check out their song The System, available now on Spotify.
You can find and message us on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram by searching The Rating Room.
You'll find all our social media links on our website, theratingroom.com, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Or feel free to drop us an email at theratingroom@gmail.com. Goodbye, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week, right here on The Rating Room.